From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West.
I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, the Salt Lake Tribune wants to make a shift from a privately owned business to a community asset, which means they want to go nonprofit. There are other nonprofit news organizations, but the Tribune's idea may be unique, and it comes with tons of questions, not just how it works or if the IRS will let them do it, but can it save the struggling paper, and is journalism something that can be owned by a community? We'll be right back.
KUER's mobile app gives you everything you love about our station on the go. Stream KUER live on your phone, listen to NPR and local stories on demand. Then shift gears and listen to our 24/7 classical music station or explore podcasts like Radio West and 45 Days. It's all on the KUER app. Download it for free for Android or iOS, wherever you get your apps.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In an editorial published in the Salt Lake Tribune last week, Tribune owner Paul Huntsman wrote what may have been the understatement of the year. The business of journalism is changing, he wrote, and the Tribune has changed. Back in 2011, before a series of layoffs, the paper had 148 employees. Today there are 60. And this is the story at papers around the country. Some have folded, some like the Tribune are holding on. An article in the Wall Street Journal earlier this month mentioned a prediction that half of the local newspapers in the United States could be forced to close within just 2 years if this trend continues. And the trend seems to be continuing. Huntsman has announced to readers and the staff a new plan, a new model. And the idea is to run the paper not as a for-profit enterprise, but as a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. That's part one. Part two is to create a nonprofit foundation to support independent journalism. Huntsman has said in his editorial making the announcement that this is the first legacy newspaper in the United States to make a move like this. But he also mentioned this. He said that he'd always seen the paper as something like a library or a hospital or an arts organization, as something, I guess, more than a business, as something that has cultural and civic value. This announcement has raised a lot of hopes for people and, of course, a lot of questions. So today in the program, we're talking about the Salt Lake Tribune's announcement and exploring this idea of journalism without profit. Paul Huntsman is joining us here in the studio. He's the publisher and owner of the Salt Lake Tribune. And Paul Huntsman, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
We also have Jennifer Napier-Pierce, the newspaper's editor. She's joining us again here in the studio. And welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hey there.
Mr. Huntsman, let me ask you first, and forgive kind of an abrupt question, but I'm guessing you're used to it at this point, and I'm guessing it's at the heart of this decision. I don't know if you want to give exact numbers, but how much is the Tribune losing a year right now?
Well, so that's a fairly complicated question.
Is it?
Because newspapers for, well, if you look at the Salt Lake Tribune for the last 15 to 20 years, it has actually somewhat been subsidized by what I call non-newspaper-related businesses. So Dean Singleton, the former publisher of the Salt Lake Tribune, saw the print trend going down well over a decade ago. And yeah. So as part of the offset and the decline of print revenue began to acquire additional businesses as part of the joint operating agreement between the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News to help offset the decline in newspaper revenue. So, you know, as you look at the Salt Lake Tribune just as a standalone business only, I would say that it hasn't been a sustainable model for quite some time, well before my acquisition of the newspaper.
Yeah. I guess that's the question. Is it sustainable? I guess the answer is pretty clearly no. And I guess how urgent is that? Like how long will it be before you just can't hold on any longer?
Well, so as we look at really where newspapers receive the vast majority of their revenue, it's always been from the print side of the newspaper. I mean, just open up any daily newspaper and look at the amount of ad space, for example, you have to advertise. Yeah. I mean, go back decades ago and you see a whole classified section which helped supported local journalism. now today we're getting our news on our iPhones or Androids, and you just have a fraction of a space of advertising. Yeah. And most of that advertising revenue is going to companies outside of the newspapers itself, Google and Facebook and so forth. So the model where newspapers have traditionally received their revenue from from newspaper print revenue, that continues and has been decreasing for well over a decade. As well as subscriptions of newspapers have continued to go down as the consumers consume the news through what was a desktop went to tablets. Now it's on their mobile devices. Who's to know what it's going to be 10 to 15 years from now? But the important thing is for us here in our community is we want to ensure that the journalism is supported, it's sustained. However, the mechanism of receiving that journalism will continue to change over time, but we need to be prepared as not only a newsroom but also as a community to ensure that we protect and ensure that this vital resource here in the community is here for the long term and that we're not continuing to try to figure this out year after year after year.
When did you first start conceiving of a model like this? Like, when did this begin as you were sort of trying to come up with an idea and a model for this?
Yeah, well, I actually looked at doing this when I acquired the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I didn't know enough about really this pathway. I thought, well, let me acquire the paper and then I'll really figure out what the long-term solution's going to be, because the situation that the Tribune was in back in 2015 when I acquired the newspaper, it was really in dire situation based upon actions of the previous owner. So we had to, in essence, triage the bleeding that was occurring. Mm-hmm. And then we had to spend time to figure out really what is the right long-term pathway going forward. So we spent quite a bit of time diligencing different options, realized that there was not a business model there. So we had to figure out something new and different. And as we spoke to many people around the country that had been looking at this much longer than we had, it really became obvious that the pathway that we're moving down of transitioning to a nonprofit model is the right long-term model for not only our newspaper, but really for this entire industry.
Jennifer, was this inevitable, something like this? You had to shift the model? It's just not working in the way. I mean, how did you see this as it was presented to you or as you were thinking about it?
So the Tribune and other newspapers, other legacy newspapers, traditionally have had two streams of income, print advertising and circulation. Yep. And we've just seen that spiral in the last year. It's become to a point where you just can't ignore it. You have to have another third leg to that stool. What's it going to be? As we looked around at other models, philanthropy really emerged as a place where we felt people would understand it. People in this community are so news-minded, and they love their news. KUER has seen that for years. Yeah. The Tribune has done a lot of heavy lifting in the investigative space. I think that the community understands that, and they don't want to live in a community without that service. And so, as soon as this kind of emerged as the front runner, it made complete sense.
And I know this sounds like a really sort of basic question, but how does going nonprofit help the financial situation of your newspaper? What changes? Why would that matter?
So the print revenue hopefully will last for as long as we can milk it. The circulation will continue to go. We'll continue to do subscriptions. However, we can ask for people to contribute in a new and different way. We've had a lot of people say, "Hey, I love what you're doing. I think I can pay more than $7.99 a month." And we just don't have a way to facilitate that. So when we get approval from the IRS, it'll open up a whole new avenue for us to fundraise.
So you're not thinking that third pillar is going to be made up of people like you're talking about necessarily. Hey, I'll pay a little bit more. Surely you're thinking of larger organizations with deeper pockets, aren't you?
It's yes and yes, everybody, yes. Right,
yes.
Paul?
Yes. So, so we've actually done a very similar model to this with the Huntsman Cancer Institute. Hmm. My father established the Huntsman Cancer Foundation. Today we have over 1 million donors that have contributed to the Huntsman Cancer Institute through the Huntsman Cancer Foundation. Very large institutions, large foundations, as well as individuals that have written out checks, you know, for less than $10. And so this is, you know, that's a vital community asset. We have a foundation whose sole purpose is to support the fight against cancer through the to the Huntsman Cancer Institute. So we've spent 20 years building that out. The Huntsman Cancer Institute now is has a very strong backing now with the Huntsman Cancer Foundation. And so we'll have a very similar model to what we built over the
people feeling so good about an organization that they want to donate, basically, and big foundations included. But what's keeping them from doing that now and just buying a subscription?
Well, so our subscriptions are, I believe, right now they're $7.99. I don't think we're gonna
on digital.
I don't think we're gonna survive long term on just looking at digital subscriptions only. We're not set up as a as an entity to be able to be able to accept donations. And as we've looked at what is the right model, it's our commitment that as members of the community want to donate and support the Salt Lake Tribune, we want to ensure transparency in the organization, the structure. We want to make sure that there isn't any other additional liabilities or any other issues that would cause people concerns or issues or problems related to contributing and supporting and ensuring that that 100% of their contributions will go into journalism. It's not going to be going into any other entity. So we had to ensure that through our application that that this is going to be a very clean structure, very easy for the consumer to understand. We'll be giving out annual reports, providing exactly what is in the foundation, what is it encompassed of, and so we had to establish a structure and an entity to make it easier, as well as those that contribute can also get the benefit, can also get the tax benefit as well.
Can I get you to respond to something that, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, do you have in mind not just those donations that are going to come from people who are concerned, but the smaller donations? Just wondering if you have in mind larger organizations with, you know, with a lot more money. And one of the questions that I've heard that comes up for every once in a while is that the way you're structured now, you don't have access to any of the money from your father's estate, and that he was very much willing to give a lot more money potentially into the Tribune to help it survive, and that he was a major supporter of the paper, and that doing this now will give you access to a good chunk of that money. Is that part of this in the equation?
No. No. So my father's goal in terms of his long-term estate planning has always been to ensure that his funds go toward alleviating human suffering. So his first priority was to attack cancer. And that's where a large portion of his assets and his net worth has gone. My generation, as we're now transitioning as stewards of that foundation, are now looking at other areas, and we would like to establish a similar vertical that we've done to cancer, that we can address another challenge in our community to help alleviate human suffering. We're not quite ready to make that announcement public, but we're in the latter stages of doing our diligence. And so our whole focus in terms of what my father's established is to alleviate human suffering.
He had no intention of putting any of his money into the Salt Lake Tribune to keep this cultural institution afloat.
Like the Salt Lake Tribune, so the way that the governance works here in our family, it went from being my father of selecting 100%, and now I have 8 siblings, my mother now, that I have to make that pitch to. So I would envision that a portion of our giving going forward will go into the Salt Lake Tribune. Absolutely. This has been something that our family has wanted to support and sustain, and a portion of that will go into the Salt Lake Tribune. But by all means, our family will not be the primary backer and the primary provider.
Is that right? So you don't want that to be the case. You want it to be coming from all these other different sources. You don't want it just to be. So I guess the question is, gosh, this is just a mechanism so the Huntsmans can give more money to the Tribune from their family funds.
Look, if if we want to have an impact on the community, just giving to a dying business model of journalism is, quite frankly, is probably not the best way to just say this is where all of our money, quite frankly, wants to go longer term. The Salt Lake Tribune is a critical community asset. We have to have quality, community-minded, independent journalism here in our state. We've seen that over the last 10 years, over 1,800 newspapers have shut down. And we've had 10 years of studies now to show what happens to communities when newspapers shut down. And everything from partisanship increases, voter turnout goes down, the quality of candidates go down. And interestingly enough, the cost of capital for municipal bonds, revenue bonds go up because you don't have that transparency and scrutiny on government like you ordinarily would, not too dissimilar to a publicly held company when you have equity analysts and rating agencies that are also providing some type of grade or report on either equity or debt that's being issued, that's being bought either in the private market or the public market. You know, we need that exact resource here in our state as well.
So, Jennifer, let me ask you, when Paul Huntsman says in the editorial that this is a community asset and that it should be owned by the community, I think I understand what that means in philosophical terms. And that sounds great. But what does it mean practically for the paper itself? Like, what would change or what would have to change, do you think, if it became a quote-unquote community asset? Would you have to create some other kind of public component or public project or some sort of partnership? Or is it enough to just say, hey, the journalism itself is a public good and the community asset? And we don't need to really do much else.
I think the parallels you can draw are, is Utah a better place because we have Utah Opera and Utah Symphony? Yes, right? I mean, we like having those kinds of cultural institutions. We consider the Salt Lake Tribune to be as indispensable as those. And so when we talk about community asset, really it's about the ability for people to feel very invested. The different business model will include a board of directors, which we don't have right now. Yeah. Paul Huntsman is our sole owner and publisher. So that will have public input and influence. We will have that completely different governance style. Obviously, we'll be taxed differently. We're setting up two different nonprofits. So there is a foundation that supports independent journalism, and then the Tribune itself will be converted into a nonprofit. And both of those will have advisory boards. We will be much more, I don't want to say much more engaged, because we are pretty engaged in the community right now, but it's just a little bit different way for people to feel ownership of the institution.
But I guess that's what I'm asking. Like, would the journalism in any sort of qualitative way be different in the sense that, oh, we'll cover more homeless issues or more issues related? Like, in which case, I guess that it would be concerning if you were a journalist that it might jeopardize your editorial independence.
Right.
Like, how much does this, and how much did you worry about the fact that this idea of it being a quote-unquote community asset may jeopardize the idea of this complete, just objective independence?
I worried a lot about it, probably more than anyone else. I think that Paul has been very supportive of creating firewalls in our bylaws to say, look, just because you give money to the institution doesn't mean you have an outsized opinion and can guide news judgment. The newsroom will stay independent. The people who contribute will be just kind of like the traditional firewall that we've had for generations with advertisers. They will give money if they support the product, and then they have no other expectations on the news. I mean, I suspect that the journalism will stay in the hands of the professional journalists and will continue to do the business that we know makes a difference in a community.
Say something about that, too, if you would, Mr. Huntsman, your concerns or the way you were thinking about this idea of maintaining editorial independence. I mean, that is the thing that makes it a valuable organization. So how are you thinking about that as you were putting this model together?
Sure. So there's the one national model that I really like is ProPublica. They're a investigative, nonprofit, digital-only news organization. They've built from the ground up over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They have 80-plus journalists right now, thousands and thousands of contributors, both large and small. They've done an outstanding job of maintaining that firewall and ensuring that those that manage the newsroom manage the newsroom, and those that contribute in, and the board that oversees that ensures that they being the organization, have the resources to accomplish their mission. And our mission here at the Salt Lake Tribune is to empower our citizens with the information that they need to move our community forward, whether that's in their families, whether it's in their work, whether it's in the ballot box. Our community is so much better off by having and being more informed with the issues that are surrounding them, yeah. Whether it's public policy issues, cultural issues. We have a very dynamic and engaging community. We have one of the youngest, one of the fastest growing economies. We're in the middle of all these debates as it relates to environmental issues, meaning clean air, clean water, public land versus private land. And we need to be able to have a forum and be able to have journalists here to be able to describe and to talk about these issues, to ask the right questions, so that we can continue to advance our community forward.
Would you turn away money? Like, let's say the Walmart offered $1.5 million. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said, we'll give you $1 million. I mean, these are
sure.
organizations that have large employers in the state, have a profound, cultural, institutional influence.
Sure.
And they're like, hey, it's just you do whatever you want with it. I mean, would you turn some of that money away just for the optics of it and the concern that it may be influential in your editorial decision?
Look, this is a question that I think we continue to have here internally. My opinion is that, if you are a member here in the community, whether you're a business or an individual or an organization, and then you have every right and opportunity to contribute into the foundation. Quite frankly, really haven't found an example that we would probably turn away funds. I'm sure there's probably some examples out there. But by all means, if the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would like to contribute in and ensure that, the foundation is stronger and down, I don't see why we wouldn't want to accept that.
Well, you wouldn't want to accept it because they would be would be perceived as trying to influence you with a lot of money, and the fact that you're an independent source and you've covered that faith in this state in a really objective, impressive way may go away. That's why.
The Salt Lake Tribune has done an outstanding job of covering religion and more specifically issues related around the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think, again, being a member of the church, what a fantastic resource it is at the Tribune. Much like I'm a registered Republican, there's nothing I want more in government than to have journalists that are scrutinizing, providing transparency, and providing good watchdog journalism. Every organization is better off when you have transparency and watchdog journalism. If you take if you take a corporation, if you take out analysts, if you take out those that monitor and scrutinize those organizations, they don't make the best decisions. I mean, my brother Peter, who runs Huntsman Corporation, if he didn't have equity analysts, debt analysts, rating agencies that continue to scrutinize every single decision he made, he wouldn't make the best decision. He's a better executive because of the scrutiny and the transparency that he has in his organization.
You want to say anything about that, Jennifer?
No, I
just,
do.
I was going to say, I just wonder if that's part of the give and take when you talking to Paul Huntsman and others about,
sure.
Look, I'm a journalist. This might not look so good. I'm a little worried about it. Paul,
yep.
You feel cool about it, but I'm a little bit more nervous about something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the same worries, fears happened when Paul acquired the paper,
right.
To be honest.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Republican, faithful member of the LDS Church, that had never happened at the Salt Lake Tribune before. And people were fearful that the independent streak that the newspapers had for 148 years was going to go away. I think now they can see the scrutiny of the church and other institutions of power in the state has not changed. And that's because of the integrity of the newsroom. We're always going to feel like people are looking at us in a different way because of our funders. But, you know, when we have a cigarette advertisement on our newsprint, like, so what does that mean? You know, why is Juul putting so much money in our advertising side? Again, you know, that is just a very separate element of what the newspaper is. And I expect that will continue in perpetuity.
So a couple of quick ones. What happens to the paywall? Does that stay up?
Yes. So as I look at our, let's just call it the three-leg stool,
yep.
Moving forward, or the business model that we see moving forward, we see digital subscriptions, digital advertising, and philanthropy as being the three leg of the stools that will support journalism longer term. Now we have that fourth leg, which is print. And look, I—
Is that much of a fourth leg anymore? Print.
Yes,
is it?
It is more every year. It's more and more challenging.
Yeah.
I know that our most dedicated readers love the print, and it's our commitment that we want to continue to extend the print as long as we can. But you know, market forces will ultimately dictate that decision. But we have to look around the corner and plan ahead.
Ads and subscriptions—they'll stay. Yeah.
Yep. They will be taxed differently because, as you know, in the nonprofit world, underwriting is acceptable, but traditional advertising is not. So
you'll call it something else or something?
No, we'll accept both.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, underwriters will get a tax benefit and advertisers will be taxed as non-business-related income. Is that right?
Unrelated business income, yeah.
Yeah.
UBTI.
Will the endorsements of political candidates, will that have to go?
Yes. Actually, I envision that as part of this application that we'll likely have to forego that resources that we provide. I don't know if it's a resource, but that—
Sure it is, Paul.
The Salt Lake Tribune, I think it's only endorsed candidates for the last 20 to 25 years. I don't know if it's done.
I think Dean Singleton started it again.
Yeah.
So it's had a hiatus. It's kind of off and on.
Yeah. So we'll likely, I mean, we've actually had this debate internally over the last several election cycles. Do we want to continue to be in the business of endorsing candidates? To me, the endorsement's always been a component of what we do, but by all means, that is far from the mission of the Salt Lake Tribune.
You'd be glad to see it go, that part?
Oh, I don't know if I'll necessarily be glad to see it go, but I think there'll be a lot of people within the newsroom that'll be happy to see it go.
One of the things that's come up, I wanted to get your take on this, is that if you're a nonprofit organization, you're not supposed to be operating in a way that makes you competitive with other commercial models. What does that do with the way you interact with or compete with the Deseret News, for example, which is still a for-profit model? Does this have any impact on that, you wanting to go nonprofit?
So as far as it relates to our relationship, to our joint venture we have and the joint operating agreement, the transition into a nonprofit will not have any impact as it relates to the agreement that we have that has been in place since 1952.
Up next year, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the existing agreement runs through the end of 2020.
Yeah.
And so, no, there will not be any impact whatsoever as it relates to the joint operating agreement.
Does the LDS Church have to, and its leadership, the Deseret News itself, do they have to sign off on this?
No.
So it wouldn't take their approval or anything like that?
No.
So how long will you stay in print? How long are you going to keep creating a print version of the paper?
We would like print again. We would like, you know, look, it would be my wish to continue print in perpetuity, but we've seen what's happened in print over the last 10 to 15 years, and we have one of the most digitally minded communities here in the state of Utah. And so we just want to make sure that we're prepared that when that does happen, that we're not scrambling to react, that we're planning ahead so that when that does happen, it's not if, but you know, but when the print does go away, that we're properly structured and prepared and have the resources to continue providing our community the quality journalism that it deserves.
I noticed, Jennifer, you said when the IRS approves this, which sounded very optimistic. Do you have any sense that this is going to be a challenge, or do you feel pretty confident? Sounds like you're kind of confident that the IRS, in fact, is going to go along with this. Do we even know at this point?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they? I mean, really. I think that they have approved numerous nonprofit news organizations, so that's not new.
Yeah.
Really, it's just the legacy piece, and I don't know why we should be penalized for having been in business for a while. You know, I honestly don't see any obstruction to us being approved. It's just a matter of time. When you're the first of anything, there's going to be some extra eyeballs on it. That's a given. So it may take us a little bit longer, but I totally expect within a year. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've got the best attorneys on this, so I'm not concerned at all.
Yeah, they've actually gone through. They've done this before. Our application's very straightforward. We've got a masthead that we're bringing toward the application and not much else. So it's fairly simple and straightforward. So they don't envision any issues. I mean, there may be a few questions that we're going to have to go through and clarify and answer. But again, I don't want to get too far in front of the IRS and their application. I've got to let them go through and do their work. But I don't envision there being any major issues.
One thing that I wanted to tease out was something in Tony Semerod's piece about this. It mentioned there were somehow questions about, Paul Huntsman, your role going forward in the Tribune if this goes through?
Well, yeah. So we're going from I am the sole owner of the Salt Lake Tribune today. As we move forward, quite frankly, I'm looking forward to establishing a board, members of the community. I've been talking about that ever since I acquired the paper, but wanted to really see what direction we were going to go in and how we're going to be structured and established before we went down this pathway. So I intend to continue to play a role with the Salt Lake Tribune going forward. If that's as publisher or if that's as chairman of the board, I'm not sure exactly. I'm really, quite frankly, not into titles, but I know I need to establish the right governance going forward because I'm more worried and concerned about once I've moved on, how is the next generation, the generation beyond that, and the governance going to look? So we want to make sure that we establish the right governance, the right independence, as we mentioned earlier, the right firewall to make sure that, again, we're here to support community-minded quality journalism. And so we want to make sure that we structure it in a way to that we raise and we have the right resources in place and that we can provide whatever resources are necessary for Jennifer or whoever the editor is that's managing and writing the paper to ensure that we have the resources moving forward.
In some of the articles in the Tribune itself, Tony's pieces, for example, I was noticing words like still in flux and things still need to be decided. It sounds like it's fairly well set in place right now. Are there still things that need to be decided? Because I guess the question I was going to ask is, did you guys jump the gun? Why did you do this now if you still have all these things up in the air? But it sounds to me like you've got things in kind of buttoned up right now, at least the concept, right? Or is that right?
Well, I think we have pillars of the concept.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there will be many more questions that come forward that we haven't thought of yet. But, I mean, Paul's been very diligently looking at this model for, what, a year?
Yeah.
So it's not like this is an overnight whim. It really has been vetted and studied, and I I think that we've pretty carefully navigated a path that it's going to work. It's going to work.
You feel that way?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But there's, I think Jennifer's absolutely correct in the sense that there's still a few unknowns as it relates to making this transition as the first legacy newspaper to turn nonprofit. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, a lot of unexpected issues that are going to be coming up. But as far as actually making that transformation, very, very highly confident. What does that mean? I think there's going to be a lot of questions that we're probably going to be answering here and learning in the next 6 to 12 months.
It's Paul Huntsman. He's the publisher and owner of the Salt Lake Tribune. Jennifer Napier-Pierce, also with us here in the studio, the editor of the Tribune. Thank you both for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We need to take a quick break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
If you're about to part ways with your old car, consider donating it to KUER. We'll take your vehicle in almost any condition, and we'll even arrange to pick it up. The proceeds from your donation support the KUER programs you love, like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Radio West. Learn more about our vehicle donation program at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about the announcement made last week. The Salt Lake Tribune is making this shift away from being a privately owned business to a nonprofit organization. They have sort of two parts here. They want to make a nonprofit foundation and make the model a not-for-profit organization. And so we're talking about what exactly that means. We had with us Paul Huntsman, the paper's owner, and Jennifer Napier-Pierce, the paper's editor, with us before. Joining us now on the program is Magda Konyichna. Magda is an assistant professor of journalism at Temple University, the author of the book Journalism Without Profit, Making News When the Market Fails. She's joining us from a studio in Philadelphia. And welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I guess I wanted to begin. You write about your own experience working as a city hall reporter for a small daily in Toronto a number of years ago. And you write about how you came to feel as though you were on a sinking ship. And I just wanted to reference that experience as we start talking about the Salt Lake Tribune. Did you see some parallels in that experience that must be going on in the people who are working for the Salt Lake Tribune and what you were experiencing then?
Sure. I mean, it's a challenging time to be in journalism. Even, 2005 to 2009, when I was at the Guelph Mercury outside of Toronto, we were, I think, a strong paper and something that was important to the community. But every year there was sort of a different way of calculating revenue. There was a different plan for how we were going to move going forward. And it started to become apparent that there wasn't really a plan. And so I applaud the folks at the Tribune for coming up with really a very ambitious strategy for looking to the future.
Does it sound like they've thought it out? Does it sound like they've checked all the boxes at least so far?
Well, I'm no tax lawyer. I think the idea, I love that Paul Huntsman says the newspaper is as important as libraries and as art museums. I would say perhaps more important. Without a newspaper, how do we know anything about what's happening in our community? And so I really appreciate that he's bringing that sort of attitude and approach to it. Very refreshing from a newspaper owner. These days, newspapers tend to be owned by large corporations. Mm-hmm. And so having that sort of local touch is really important. I'm not as confident as they are about the IRS status. This is really a first of its kind in the United States. Mm-hmm. Here in Philadelphia, the Inquirer and the Daily News are for-profit and are owned by the nonprofit LenFest Institute. Yeah. And that's quite a different model. I know that they've had some conversations. Huntsman and his people have had some conversations with the IRS, and I'm not sure sort of what the outcome of those has been. But I'm guessing it might be a little more challenging than they anticipate. But I wish them luck. I mean, it really could be a model going forward.
I wonder what the challenge is. It's interesting. You know, they were talking about these various pillars, and you have in them you have subscriptions, you have advertising. That's part of all of it. How can you have a for-profit pillar part, but then also ask for donations along the way, have a paywall, and then ask for donations along the way? It seems like I don't know what the inclination of the IRS would be to accept those as coexisting entities within a paper. Do you have any idea about that?
It's a good question. So my research primarily has been on the body of new news nonprofits. Paul mentioned ProPublica, mm-hmm. Organizations like that have been springing up around the country for the last 10 or 15 years, although some have predated that time. And some of those organizations do sell advertising. I think for the most part, maybe some of them have experimented with sort of a premium content paid space. But I think for the most part, for them, they see sort of charging for content as antithetical to, seeing journalism as something that's essential to the community. Mm. So very few, if any, of those organizations would have a paywall. But there is sort of, you know, the line is a little bit blurred. I think the challenge for the Salt Lake Tribune might be more significantly in what it chooses to cover. So these new news nonprofits really focus on, ProPublica is very heavily investigative, and mm-hmm. I think they can make an argument that this is the kind of work that increasingly is not being done by commercial news organizations. If the Salt Lake Tribune plans to continue as it has been, covering sports, doing restaurant reviews, I'm not exactly sure how the IRS would respond to that.
Well, yeah, I think that's an important question. It's one of the I mentioned, like, how would the nature of the journalism that they're doing have to change in some way? And if you call yourself a nonprofit, do the stories that you're doing have to have some more weight to them in some way, some more sort of community connection? As you said, sports doesn't seem to sort of fit the bill. So do you get a sense that that could be problematic from the IRS or other observers of this?
I mean, you know, from my perspective as a journalism professor, I would say that sports and arts are very much the fabric of a community and are part of sort of building up a community structure where we all come to sort of care about the things that affect all of us, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say that you know, even that sports reporting is pretty important. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how the IRS will see that. And I should say, I mean, I think all of this, you know, sort of guessing and forecasting how some people who we don't even really know who they are at the mm-hmm. IRS mm-hmm. Will view this, I think it really shows that it's time for a nationwide conversation about the future of journalism. I think that we shouldn't – I think it's a problem that we're saying, you know, this is this very important decision for the community of Salt Lake, this thing that could be pioneering across the country – is in the hands of the IRS, which is not an organization that is mm-hmm. primarily concerned about providing good quality journalism. So I'm hoping that this may spur a conversation. And, you know, I hope that regardless of how things go, that Huntsman and the others at the Salt Lake Tribune will be willing to sort of talk publicly about the nature of that discussion at some point. And if it doesn't get approved, you know, why is that? And what do we need to do going forward to preserve quality journalism?
Professor, say a little bit more, if you would, about what is unique about this model. I mean, one of the things you've mentioned, we've talked about before, is that there are other nonprofit models. This one, though, in particular, is, as you've said, distinctive. It's unique. Explain how.
Yeah, so I think there are sort of two things that we can look to that are in some ways similar. One is sort of the burgeoning world of nonprofit news startups like ProPublica, which these days exist in almost every American state and almost every major city across the U.S. Places like, you know, I did research on the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism in Madison, Wisconsin, which was founded by Andy Hall, who had been an investigative reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. They closed their investigative desk, and he wanted to figure out a way to continue doing investigative journalism in the state of Wisconsin. And so he started a self-standing investigative center that strictly does investigative stories, is funded by grants, by donations from individuals, and a little bit of assorted revenue. But those are their primary sources of revenue. And they spend, you know, weeks or months or a year on a story, and then they give it away to other organizations to republish. So that's one model with some similarities, but obviously some differences. And then the second model is sort of the quite small world of newspapers that are nonprofit affiliated. So in 2016... Jerry Lenfest, who owned our daily newspapers here in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Daily News, set up the Lenfest Institute and donated those papers to the Institute. They continue to be for-profit, which means there's no question about, you know, can they cover the Eagles? There's no question about can they endorse a mayoral candidate? They continue to collect circulation revenue and advertising revenue. I think Paul Huntsman would rightly say that revenue is precipitously dropping, and that's a concern, right?
Yeah.
And the Institute sort of acts as a place where experimentation and innovation around journalism can happen, and it's a granting body. So it gives grants to those papers, but also to news organizations around the country.
What problems do you see or challenges do you see about the idea of editorial independence? We were talking a bit about that with, you know, Jennifer and Paul. If you have large organizations, let's say the Koch brothers, let's say in Utah, there's no more powerful institution than the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And if they're offering significant amounts of money to plug into this foundation or this nonprofit group, how does that jeopardize editorial independence? Mr. Huntsman seemed to suggest that they could manage it, that people always have to manage these decisions in news organizations. But does this offer a unique or different kind of challenge under this new model?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. And there were some things that Mr. Huntsman and that Jennifer said that were heartening, and some things that I thought maybe need a little more sort of working out. I think they're right, of course. Newspapers have long had firewalls to separate the advertising revenue from the editorial side. But I think Jennifer's example of Juul advertising in the paper is, you know, that situation is quite different from getting a large grant from the church or from a corporation, because I think it's clear why Juul is advertising in the paper, because they want to sell more e-cigarettes or whatever. And also, we know that they're advertising. You know, we know that they're funding the paper because the ad shows up in the paper. And so my first question would be, they talked a lot about transparency, but I hope that they're planning to be open about all of their grants, right? I hope that I will be able to look online and see who is funding the newspaper with, you know, in the current model with advertising, it's very clear. I open the paper and I see those ads.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important to be able to do that with in the nonprofit structure as well.
Is this the new way forward, these nonprofit models? You write in your book that it seems like there is a new media regime that's emerging through all of this. It's not going to be as stable and predictable, you say, as in the past. But is this... It sounds like you're a bit heartened by the fact that people are trying these new models.
Absolutely, totally. I mean, I think innovation is great, and I think innovation that's based in the conviction that journalism is important and essential, I think is really important, right? And so I'm really heartened to hear Mr. Huntsman's, you know, approach and attitude towards the value of journalism. I don't think there is one sort of the way moving forward. Throughout the 20th century, we had a few models that worked pretty well: the newspaper model, the television model, and things, I think, felt quite stable. Per capita circulation revenue in the United States, per capita circulation in the United States has been dropping since the 1970s. Yeah. And newspapers have not really responded to that because the advertising market was so rich and was so able to subsidize journalism. Right. And so I think even that model that seemed stable wasn't really. I think going forward, I'm hoping that the model of the Inquirer will be one model, the Salt Lake Tribune will be another model, the ProPublica's and Wisconsin Centers for Investigative Journalism will be a third model. I think there's lots of space for a big diversity of situations to exist, and I'm hoping that folks will be looking to the Salt Lake example, and I think it really could end up being sort of a pioneering move for people who own newspapers and are concerned about the future of them.
About a minute left. Let me ask you finally, going back to your situation working through that small daily in Toronto. And you say that you came to realize that the starting point for the question isn't this just this idea of nonprofit news, but you write, but an examination of what journalism is losing every time a reporter is laid off and a paper goes under. Say something about that, if you would, finally, because that seems to be those are the stakes here, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And again, I'm glad that Mr. Huntsman isn't saying we're going to preserve the print newspaper at all costs, right? Yeah. This is about journalism and a journalism that is grounded in the community, that is aware of doing what its community needs it to do. And I think that's something the nonprofit model is well suited to as well. And so I'm hopeful of every project that says journalism is essential to democracy. We need to connect with our audience. We're facing not just a crisis in the news business, but a crisis of trust and representation in journalism as well. And so being open to the community and connecting with the community is really important. So I'm hopeful. Mm.
Magda Konyichna is an assistant professor of journalism at Temple University. Her book is Journalism Without Profit, Making News When the Market Fails. She joined us from a studio in Philadelphia. Professor, thanks very much for the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. We had technical direction today from Bob Nelson, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.